Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX. A few minutes past 3 p.m. Now's the time to call if you would like to cross swords with Wheeler or pick his brain or just get your opinion out on the KMOX airwaves about what we heard just about 1 hour ago. So 314-436-7900-800-925-1120. Of course, you can also leave us a voice memo by going to odyssey.com, clicking on KMOX, and next to the Listen Live, you'll see a little telephone icon, microphone icon. You click on that, and you have 60 seconds to leave us a message. It goes straight to Andrew, and you could be on the air within a couple of minutes. If people are going to call while they are doing that, Wheels, why don't you reset the table for people who are just tuning in? They're dying to know what the Cardinal said.
All right, so we'll keep this pretty simple. So this was a press conference that Bill DeWitt Jr. directed at the beginning, but it included John Mozeliak and Chaim Bloom. So what DeWitt Jr. opened up with was noting that John Mozeliak will still be the president of baseball operations for 2025. And he did say, and I mean, I'm quoting, this will be Mo's final year. DeWitt Jr. said that. Mo has basically said that for a couple of years now, that 2025 was going to be his last year. But
let me put a pin in that. Yeah. Bernie wasn't happy with that. How do you feel about
it? Yeah, you know, in all honesty, there's two parts to it. I'm fine. I like Mo. I mean, I can see his flaws, but I also see that he's got good things too. I understand wanting to let him finish what he signed up for, because you have to keep in mind that he and DeWitt are of a like mind in this. Mo's not doing things that are making Bill DeWitt mad. They're doing the things they talk about together, and they're executing a plan together. So moving on from Mo would be symbolic. It would not be a practical difference. Make sense the way that I'm saying it?
It does. Would you expect him to be with the Cardinals organization for years to come in some capacity?
Good question. I don't know if he wants to. I mean, he might want to be in a higher up capacity, or he may want to go do something else. He might want to go work for Major League Baseball. We don't know, and I don't know that he's really wanted to get into that very much, because I think he wants this to be. He did refer to in the press conference, he wanted to talk about, he wanted his legacy to be something about getting this back on track. So for him, it's a lot about like, okay, we know we've slipped back. I want to help start the process forward. But again, I just want to say, I'm not defending what's gone wrong with this. I'm not saying that Mo has done everything right. What I'm saying is it would be just a symbolic move if you canned him right now. Because the vision is his and DeWitt's together. So with Bill DeWitt Jr. being as involved as he is, firing Mo would not change what 2025 looks like. I just want to be clear. That's why I don't think it's that big of a deal. But if you're looking at it from a public relations standpoint, having someone else as the public-facing voice of the team would probably help. Because there's a large percentage, and Mo jokes about it, Bernie referenced it, Mo jokes about how people can't stand him. There is a segment of the fan base that can't stand him and will not buy anything he's selling.
What is the big knock?
It's the record. It's the record, right? They had a losing season last year, mediocre this year. They haven't been to the World Series since 2013. You know, like if they had been deep in the playoffs and, you know, deep into the NLCS, or, you know, losing in the World Series at some point in the last 3 or 4 years, the mood and the vibe about Mo would be different. This was not the negative vibe about him 7 years ago, because they were much closer to being a contender. And look, some people don't like the way that Mo communicates. He's just got an affect that some people don't like. And he does, even people on national radio, like MLB Network Radio, will joke about some of the terms that he uses. He likes to use the word arbitrage when it comes to like baseball fans don't want to hear those terms. And it's some of that. It's a disconnect with the way that it's more about the word game, though, than the ideas behind the words. It's just, you know how people are. Mm-hmm. People don't like it to sound like it's a business. They want it to sound like it's their sports team. Mm-hmm. And don't want it to sound like it's the stock market. So there's a communication side of that, an affect side of that. But mostly it's just the record. It's just not getting deep enough into the playoffs on a regular basis here in the last 5 years. And it's been a consistent, from that standpoint, right, from a playoffs success standpoint, a pretty consistent decline since 2011, right? The next few years, you were in it 2013, you're in the World Series, but it's been kind of slowly going away from that. That's the core of the dislike.
So they're basically doing what the Blues are doing with Steen.
Yeah, basically. You know, Doug Armstrong is going to finish the year. Alex Steen's going to take over after that. There are a lot of Blues fans that have major issues with some of the decisions that Doug Armstrong's made since the Stanley Cup team. But it's a lot closer, right? If the Cardinals had won the World Series in 2019, I don't think there's the level of anger that there is right now. Because there's some frustration with the Blues, but the fact that the Stanley Cup was 5 years ago instead of 13 years ago is a bit of a difference. It gives people give you a little bit more leeway in a shorter amount of time. But the longer it goes, the more frustration builds up.
So whether it goes great and we win a World Series the next 5 years or it's terrible, Chaim Bloom is going to be the guy.
He got a 5-year contract. That was something they announced.
Chaim Bloom.
Yeah, this is an interesting, to me, this is an interesting player because one of the things that people like me have been talking about are the lessons that the Cardinals can learn from the teams that are not big payroll teams but have success. Milwaukee, Cleveland, Tampa Bay. Well, Chaim Bloom spent 14 years with the Tampa Bay Rays. He started as an intern. He eventually got hired into player development, eventually became their president of baseball operations, right? Eventually was their guy in charge. He's known for being one of the guys that helped build their way of developing players, especially pitchers. So he's got a strong background in player development with the Rays. He got the Boston job in 2019. And if you look at the Boston Red Sox now and you look at Jaron Duran and some of their really good young players, those were guys that were drafted and developed under Chaim Bloom's watch. But he got fired there in part because of politics. So to understand this, and I'm going to tell this briefly, but this is because the big criticism of Bloom tends to be, well, he blew the Mookie Betts trade, so he must be an idiot. Because the Red Sox traded Mookie Betts to the Dodgers, and they didn't get very much in return. They ended up getting a few players, like a guy that's a middling, everyday, like, number 6 or 7 hole hitter and a pretty good part-time catcher. They didn't get what you would think you would get for an MVP. And the reason that you didn't is because the Red Sox ownership demanded that the trade be a payroll dump, a salary dump, and not just go get the most talented players you can get. So they wanted to attach David Price's contract because David Price was getting older and getting hurt and not performing well, but making $32 million a year. They wanted to dump that with Betts just to get rid of the money. So they did that with the Dodgers. The Dodgers ate half of the $100 million they owed David Price just to get Betts, and Betts was making $27 million that year too. And they were only doing that for one guaranteed year of Mookie Betts. So they gave up less because they took on the money, because Boston's ownership cared more about saving that money and getting under the luxury tax than they did about maximizing the talent return for an MVP player. Well, they saddled that on Bloom. They made that his fault. Well, he didn't get enough in that deal. Well, you made it so he couldn't. Because if you're going to tell a team the cost of getting Mookie Betts is his $27 million and another $50 million for a player you don't want or need, well, then they're not going to give you the talent in return. You're getting the salary relief. So he got caught up in that and eventually got canned in Boston. But to me, when I look at the young players that they grew and developed on his watch in Boston, they're the ones that are their best players now. Guys like Tristan Cassis and Jaron Duran, they've got some pretty good young pitching there as well. And again, that's something that he's known for.
Let's talk to Bob. Pardon me, on line one. Bob, thanks for calling in. Go right ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to say, when you get good players and then you trade to get them back and try to put a positive spin on it, that tells me, number one, the organization is flailing. And number two, I hope they get somebody of the quality of a Tony La Russa back in the front office that'll show the fans they're serious about winning. And in the press conference, when they're talking about the business side of it, I'm so sick of hearing billionaires talk about how they're struggling. And then they announce a payroll reduction. Well, good luck getting 2.85 million fans back this year. And that's my comments. Thanks for the forum, guys.
Thank you, Bob.
It's pretty common from what I'm getting on Twitter, too. And it's, look, there's nothing wrong with the fan base.
What did the one guy
say? Look at that way. Here, real quick, I'm going to pull it up here because I want to get it right. He said my rear end hurts from all the smoke they're blowing up in.
Basically what Bob said.
I mean, and look, no fan base is going to be happy or should be happy hearing about the Major League payroll coming down. Because that's I think he makes a great point. And what was the caller's name?
I just forget.
Bob makes a great point. Regular people do not care about whether or not the wealthy people who own sports teams are making money. They don't. And you shouldn't. What you care about is the quality of the product. Are you entertaining me? Are you giving me something that I'm entertained by that I want to stay with? That's what a fan's standard is. And no words that they could say today are going to change that. There's nothing they could do today. The only way they're going to do it is if these things actually work. If these things work and you start winning games, Bob and every other fan will be like, I don't care what the payroll is if you're winning.
Yeah. I'll ask Gould this in a few minutes, but how long into 2025 do you think the Cardinals have if it's another repeat of the last 2 years before people stop coming to the game?
It's a good question. I mean, I think you'll see the opening day thing be the opening day thing. That's not going to change. I would imagine that season ticket sales, just looking at it now, we don't know what they're going to do, but it doesn't sound like anything major. I would imagine it's going to be maybe a pace for more like, because I think Bill DeWitt III said that they were about 2.8 million this year. I would say their pace will probably be just a little below that. I would think they're going to be 2.5 to 2.8, somewhere in that range. And better if the team is good, right? So if the team is good and you get to June and July and they're on pace to win the division or whatever, well, then the attendance ramps up as you go. But the only way the attendance is coming back is by winning. It's not going to come back by firing Mo. It's not going to come back by firing Ollie. It's not going to come back if you bring in somebody's name that they recognize to run one of those two positions. You're going to have to make people understand that the product is better, and there's only one way to do that, and that's for the games to go your direction when you start up next April.
Welcome back, guys. DGS. It seems like we're going very Cardinals heavy. We are. We didn't know exactly what they're going to say in the press conference at 2 p.m. It was impactful for people who understand baseball, I think. I don't put myself in that group. I played baseball. I know the basic game. I know the players. But I'm not like you and Gould and your other in the nerdery. And so I think people like me who react more emotionally may have been a little like, oh, come on.
Yeah. The big picture was exactly what I thought it was going to be. It was going to be intriguing to the people who aren't as tied into the wins and the losses. You know what I mean? Like, even with my favorite teams, I wasn't born and raised a Cardinals fan, so I don't root for them as a fan. I root for them because I know people there and I want the people that I know to have success. And because they're a business partner of my business. It's important for me that the Cardinals are good. But it's not an emotional thing. And even with my own teams, I don't buy a ticket to go see my team win. I buy a ticket to go see them play because I enjoy watching the game being played. But I know that I'm a weirdo in that. I know that I'm in the minority of people.
I'm kind of like you, though.
Yeah.
Like, I want the Cardinals to win.
Right.
But I go to games because I have a good time eating hot dogs and drinking beer.
Exactly. But on the baseball side, I'm more into the nerdery. And I'm not in, and the big picture things, I didn't expect them. I didn't expect any big firings.
Yeah.
I didn't. So my expectation wasn't that, but I know that a lot of fans, and this is not me, I'm better than you. I'm just saying this is a different viewpoint, that the nerdy things appeal to me, but I don't think the nerdy things appeal to the people, to a general fan base, because most people aren't nerds like that.
Yeah, they have their own life. Let's talk to Frank on line two. Frank, welcome to the show. Go ahead.
Hello, Dave. It's Frank. I thought maybe I'd give you guys another perspective on the Cardinals and their announcements today, which mm-hmm. I think are great. The player development is critical to really every team, and that's how they, reduce cost in the long term. But I think the bigger picture is it comes back to pitching. The Cardinals have, three good pitchers, two they acquired in the offseason, and they've got a 3-4-5 with Pallante is one of those three. So I'm talking to your hardcore fans. Mm-hmm. But I think financially, this team can come back and compete right away. But it's going to take significant investment in the pitching to get a 1-2. If you're going to compete with, the top teams in the league, it's not going to be done with the ERAs the team has now. So I really enjoy following them. Been doing a long time, season ticket holder. But those of us who follow know pitching, you know, look at who's winning. Why is Milwaukee good? The Dodgers, the Mets, the Braves, the Phillies. They've got pitching. So that's my main comment. But I think financially, if they would take the risk, and it's a big risk, as pitching is going to cost even more, the premium pitching, not guys with a 4 and 5 ERA, can turn the team around immediately. And I know that's probably not going to happen, but I thought I'd give you another perspective.
Thank you, Frank.
It's a good one. It's a good one, because one elite pitcher would have more value to this team than 3 or 4 middling ones combined, right? Yeah. So you take Michaelis, Gibson, Lynn, and Mats. That's $60 million.
I know it's not this simple, but if we let Goldie go, there's $26 million?
Yes.
And you go get a $26 million pitcher?
Mm-hmm.
Is that just silly?
It's not silly. It's probably not going to happen. Now, keep in mind, Sonny Gray's money goes up $15 million a year. So you're adding some there. But again, these are this is the money coming off. It's $26 million for Paul Goldschmidt if they don't bring him back. It doesn't sound like they will. I think Katie Wu reported that they're not bringing him back. And it doesn't make sense to bring him back given his age. Kyle Gibson is $12 million that they can move on from if they don't pick up a player option. Lance Lynn is $12 million that they can move on from if they don't pick up an option. And I mentioned Keenan Middleton is $5 million that was wasted because he got hurt. Gallegos was $5 million. There's a lot of money to play with there, so even a lower payroll could include that pitcher that he's talking about.
Let's talk to Bill on line one. Bill, go right ahead. Thanks for holding on.
Mr. DeWitt and a lot of the people around the Cardinals are very proud of the 2.85 million people attending the games. That's just not true. There was a tremendous kickback from the fans not coming to the games, not attending the games, often 10 to 15,000 less than the quote-unquote announced attendance. Who's going to speak about that?
You just did, and you're right. The ticket attendance numbers that Major League Baseball advertises are tickets sold. So if you go look at an attendance list, MLB.com, ESPN.com, whatever, that's tickets sold, and that's what every team refers to. I don't know of any team that publicly reveals the numbers of people that walk through the gates. You're right. It was way lower than that, and it's been a topic of conversation for 2 months. I mean, we all have talked about it. You can see the difference, right? I mean, there were some of those games where the attendance was announced at, let's say, 30 because the tickets sold were 30.
In fact,
but there were half of them not there.
Ricky and Rooney were kind of making fun of it.
Everybody saw it. I mean, the idea that nobody's talking about that is kind of silly, but that is, he's correct. And that's the message that made all of this a press conference. If those seats were full, we wouldn't be dealing with a press conference today.
Guys, DGS 337. Matt Pauley just back to the ballpark, going to get his take on everything. But first, a live look from Dave Murray.
Hey, guys, couldn't be with you live today. It's a travel day. Just want to say thanks for your hospitality on Friday, being in and doing the show, and the Evolution Festival went off without a hitch. It's good times. And our weather is going off without a hitch, too. We are in a very quiet pattern. The circulation around the old hurricane, it's still there, but it's in the Ohio Valley now, so it's far enough away from us, so we're in pretty good shape. Little high-pressure system has dominated our weather today, and it will tonight and part of tomorrow. But also on Tuesday, a dry cool front is going to drop in the northwest flow and drop our temperatures a couple of degrees. Wednesday looking like the coolest day of the week, and then we'll warm up a little bit, but certainly nothing extreme Thursday and Friday. So let's go over that forecast on this Monday night. Clear skies in play, nice evening, 63 for the overnight low. On Tuesday, lots of sunshine, but it will turn breezy in the afternoon. Northwest flow, not overly windy, but just a little breezy as the winds kick to the northwest, 76 for the high. Tuesday night, crystal clear skies. It's cool, maybe even chilly by morning. Perfect Dave Glover weather, 49 for the overnight low. Wednesday, a delightful day. Lots of sunshine. High temperature 74. Again, Wednesday's the coolest day of the week. Then on Thursday and Friday, temperatures come up into the upper 70s for the most part on Thursday and Friday. The atmosphere is still kind of moving in slow motion, so there's no big changes in our weather over the next 5-6 days or so. Still, the tropics are extremely active. Most of the action is deep in the Atlantic, but I'm still concerned about another system developing in the Gulf of Mexico around the 5th of October, and that is coming up fairly quickly. There you go, guys. Enjoy the weather, and talk to you live tomorrow.
I'm so weird. Dave Murray's doing the weather on my show 4 hours a day, 5 days a week. He mentions me, and I go,
Dave said
well,
my name.
Well.
That's how I am with you.
Oh, God.
Every time
oh,
you say my name, I'm like, Dave Glover just said my
name. Matt Pauly is here. First of all, the hair is tight.
Thank you.
Yeah, it looks
nice.
Really good.
Appreciate
very nice.
It. Was there a vibe in the room today?
Huh. I don't know. No, there wasn't. I think it was people. If there was a vibe, it was a vibe of curiosity. But outside of that, it just felt like the normal professional environment that is St. Louis Cardinals press conferences. Mm-hmm.
So it seems like you and Wheeler and Gould and Mikolas kind of knew what was coming. No big surprises, just overall thoughts and analysis.
The actual announcement that Heim Bloom is going to take over for Mo, that's the biggest takeaway from this. We didn't know that was going to happen going in. We thought that it would happen.
Eventually.
Yeah. Like, we could all say that Heim Bloom is likely to be the next president of baseball operations. But the fact that they overtly said that today and the succession plan is now in place, I think that's the biggest takeaway. I also think it's important. I recorded a one-on-one interview with Mo that's going to run during Sports Open Line tonight. Something we talked about. Mo wasn't going to go away. So he was going to do his final year. You've got a farm director you need to hire. That's a really important position to hire. Can you hire that guy? Can you, guy or girl, can you hire that individual and get the level of talent you want if they don't know who their boss is going to be a year from now?
Great point.
So you needed to have that in place before you start they're trying to robustly add to this organization in so many different areas. If you want to bring in the best of the best, and that's what the St. Louis Cardinals are supposed to be. They are supposed to be the best of the best. If you want to bring those people into the organization, they need to know who they're working for now and working for a year from now.
And that's true because, you know, we can focus on that particular job, but they need to add 5 to 10 more high quality instructors too, right? You know, like minor league instructors. Again, if you're going to get the best of the best, who wants to come in on what might be a 1 year option? Well, it's different now. If you know that Heim Bloom is taking over after this year and he's a part of hiring you.
Let's talk a little bit about the money. The money is kind of a boring part of it, but it's a necessary evil to get a good team on the field. Mo talked about a payroll reduction because of the reduction in the people, you know, buying tickets, but they're investing a lot of money, it sounds like, in infrastructure.
Yeah, this is where it gets a little bit murky because how much... Is it the cost of a veteran relief pitcher that they're going to be spending to do all the technology upgrades they need, plus all the staff members they bring in? So I understand why they're saying what they're saying. I also think I've never been upset about Cardinals payroll. I've been upset about sometimes allocation of Cardinals payroll. I think sometimes you look at who's getting the money and what you're getting, you know, wins per dollar, for
like
lack
now.
Of a better term.
Yeah.
That's my issue. But let's look at Lance Lynn and Kyle Gibson specifically. Would have it really been a drop-off if we would have seen a full year of Gordon Graceffo or a full year of Michael McGreevy? There would have been some moments. There would have been some growing pains. So if they're going to move forward with those guys, I don't think the level of number of like wins is really going to drop off. And if anything, those guys should get better because they're young. So it's not the best look in the world when they sit here and say, we're going to reduce major league payroll. But from an impact standpoint, if they're not going to go all in, if they're not going to like bring in all these high-end players, well, then what's really the point in bringing in a Lance Lynn, Kyle Gibson again?
Yeah. So to me, the money stuff is always murky because it only means whatever each person wants it to mean, right? When somebody hears payroll reduction, well, all I want to know is how much. If you're cutting by $10 million, who cares? If you're cutting by $60 million, that's a bigger story. And we're going to know eventually, right? Because we're going to see what they end up doing. So there are payroll reductions, and then there are fire sales. And this doesn't seem like it's going to be a fire sale. But let's also get into this. Detroit's payroll was $80 million less than the Cardinals this year. They're in the playoffs. Milwaukee's was $70 million less than the Cardinals. They're in the playoffs. Cleveland was $80 million less. They're in the playoffs, and they won their division in the American League. I don't care what your payroll is. Win.
Yeah.
All that matters is how good you are. And the reason we've had to talk about the payroll increases in recent years is because they've had to push their Major League payroll up to pay for Miles Mikolas, Steven Matz, Lance Lynn, Kyle Gibson, because they haven't been developing their own pitchers. So I am not a big, I don't care about a billionaire's money. I'm not worried about what they make or don't, or what they spend and don't. But all I care about is the one loss record. I don't care what you spend to get there. Just get better.
Here's the perfect world scenario, and this may take 2-3 years. Get to a point where you are developing players, impact major league players, just the same way that Milwaukee and Tampa does, and then have a larger payroll than those teams. So when you're one like legit impact player away from being a World Series contender,
you go get
because
them.
You're the St. Louis Cardinals, you can go get them, where the Milwaukee Brewers can't go get them.
Yeah.
The Tampa Bay Rays can't go get them. It's got to be a two-pronged attack here on these things, and right now it's like a half-pronged attack.
Yeah. There are six playoff teams with a lower payroll than the Cardinals, and most of those are between 60 and 80 million lower than the Cardinals. The amount that they're spending, even if they cut back to 150 million from where they were this year at 183.
So complaints and dissatisfaction from fans. Wheels, what are you seeing already on Twitter? And Matt, what are you expecting to hear on Sports Open Line?
Yeah, I mean, it's I've seen a few. There are a few people saying this is the kind of thing they need. They've been spending poorly, and spending poorly again in the future is not the solution, right?
Yeah.
But more than that, I'm seeing more the frustration with they're unhappy that it's the same guy in charge, that Mo's in charge. They're unhappy that the payroll's going down. And again, there's nothing invalid about any of those concerns, because the bottom line is the one loss record, and not just in the regular season, but their playoff record has been way below expectation for a number of years. It's not just these last two.
Yeah, it's Mo and Marmol being back. People just look at it and say, these are the guys who have not won enough the last 2 years, so why are they getting another opportunity to do so? I would push back and say, especially when it comes to Marmol, like this is not his fault. And he's not the perfect manager. Nobody is. But this guy has not been put in the best position to succeed, and any manager would have had a hard time doing much more than he did the last couple of years.
No argument. I mean, again, I don't know if Ollie's a great manager, and that's kind of the point. We don't know. He's still in the to-be-decided category, but if you're blaming him, you're blaming the wrong dude.
353 DGS on KMOX. Derek Gould's going to join us at the top of the hour. Do one more segment for you on the Cardinals. Wheels is telling us that his little brother, I guess, basically, your mom and dad's dog.
my little sister, yeah.
Had to be put down at 18 years.
18 and a half. I mean, 18 years and 8 months, man.
That's amazing. Yeah.
It is crazy. I mean, and it's funny because my little sister is a lot younger than me, for people that don't know. Like, I'm 52, about to be 53. She's 34. So she was born when I was 18. When I was a month away from graduation is when she was born. And she was 16 when we got the dog. When they got the dog, I was the age that she is now.
Wow.
I mean, how crazy is that? Like, my dad was only a little older than I am now when they got this dog.
I'm not sure I told you this story, but when we put Augie down, I guess it's coming up on 2 years now. His last night, we decided to let him have a party.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome.
And so he had burgers and pizza and you name it. And Maureen didn't go to bed that night because he basically spray painted the walls.
Oh, no.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah. Well, yeah, I know that. I know that experience, not from that exact circumstance, but I know that experience. And I know the experience, too. The dog's name's Roxy. That dog is one of my dogs. I mean, she just is. You know, we took care of her when she was a puppy for a couple of months while my parents were out of the country. She lived with our dogs and got to be, you know, basically one of ours, and would always go nuts when she saw me or my wife or my daughter. So Yeah, it sucks for everybody. I mean, we had a nice little family group text, though, and a lot of pictures, and I showed you guys some of them, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's never not terrible. That thing, I mean, I've done it 3 times with my own, and now I've got, now my dogs are the old ones in the family. Now I've got a 13-year-old, soon to be 14, and a 12-year-old, so I know my time will be coming again, and it's the worst.
Not sure exactly why or what it says about me, but I cry more at the loss of a dog
than a person.
People.
You know,
they're so perfect.
Yeah,
I've always said that if dogs could talk, we'd like them 80% less. Like we imbue them with whatever we want, and oh look, now he's thinking this, now he's thinking that, and they're just, it's like losing a perfect person.
Well, I think some of it's that, some of it is that they are more a part of you because they're so attached to you.
Mm-hmm.
But you see them every day.
It's true.
You know, I mean, like the only equivalent I can come up with is an immediate family member,
mm-hmm.
right? Like a parent or a brother or sister or a kid or a wife or husband or whatever, because that's how much you're with them every single day. So, yeah, it's hard, man.